All right. Welcome back.
I'm going to write down that like 10:30 to 11 a.m. is Patrick's. Have you had coffee this morning?
Yeah.
So this is the prime time for that caffeine kicking in. I'm going to write because it's been pretty consistent at this time.
I love it. I love it. Okay. Hey, welcome back to the podcast. Patrick Chappelle here. Oh, folks, this episode is wonderful, fantastic, energetic. You might end up with a six-pack just by listening to this episode. Wow. Because I have my friend Chase Tucker up in the house. Chase is a Peloton instructor. He is the fittest man that I know. Is that the right way to say it? The fittest man?
Well, fittest is a word.
Fittest. He's the fittest.
There is the survival of.
He would, for sure, if the zombie apocalypse hits, Chase will be okay. Chase will be fine. Chase.
Just due to pure fitness? Pure survival skills
and,
or anything?
Yeah, and his survival skills. He's good at surviving, I think. And he can run. I was saying the other day ago that like if the zombie apocalypse comes and it involves like lots of running, I'm done for. I got a solid three in, and I'm gonna have to take a break. So me and the peanut allergy folks and the bread people, we're gonna all be goners because we can't survive the zombie apocalypse.
The bread people.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I love my folks who are gluten deficient. They're awesome people. And I have some dear friends who are in that boat. But if bread can take you out, a zombie for sure. You're not going to make it. I'm with you because I can't run that much. So we will like, you know, be together in the end times. This is a weird way to intro, but Chase. So anyway, Chase is a Peloton instructor. He's an amazing guy. You're going to love him. Such a wonderful story. Originally from Chicago, Illinois. He's lived all over. And I think you're just going to enjoy Chase. He's got some really, really great insights that I think some of you will find incredibly helpful. And yeah, so let's get into that soon here. But before we do that, let's check in with Ben. Ben, anything you want to update us on, you want to give a shout out to this week?
Well, Patrick, I'm finally doing what you've always wanted. I'm putting out music on an accessible platform to listeners. It's not Spotify, so ooh. Sorry about that.
Let's do it.
Yeah, there's a new platform that I've found called Matter, MATTER.
Yeah.
Is very similar in its design to something like SoundCloud or Bandcamp, where it's artists directly upload to the service and they have control over their profile directly. But what's really cool about Matter, not a sponsor, is they are doing what I think Spotify should be doing,
right,
which is that direct connection between the artist and the platform that people are accessing their music from. And on the artist page, there's actually options to make an artist club, which
ooh,
is like a subscription for extra content.
Yeah.
Listeners can actually donate money directly to your music.
That's great.
Similar to, you know, a Twitch stream or something like that. Like the, you know, fans right now are consuming content that they feel like that they are a part of.
Right.
And Matter is creating this platform that is allowing more connection between artists and listeners. And it is giving people what they want, which is that connection. And it's making people feel like they belong. There's also a live global chat
ooh,
on the platform where everyone who's listening to music can talk to each other.
That's awesome.
So it's really cool.
So
it's a
Matter,
really cool way to connect to people. Matter streaming.
Okay.
It's completely free. Highly recommend it. It's small right now. It's growing. It's got a really cool underground indie group of people right now, part of it. So you can find some really cool unknown artists at the moment. But I have a feeling that it will blow up just because I think that they're doing it right in terms of the way that they're offering music to people.
Yeah. And I think that's a good reminder to everyone, especially as we're still in the midst of figuring out what does music, live concerts, artistry, all of that look like as we move forward in the rest of this year and in years to come. So right now, if you've got a favorite indie artist or any artist that you follow, like if they have opportunity for you to purchase something, purchase that, like a t-shirt, a record, a CD, which I know you're like, I don't really listen to CDs. Buy the CD, because that will help support them, especially because right now, none of us are going to concerts. And that's how a lot of our favorite local and even mid-sized and big artists, like this, how they support their families and continue to do the beautiful thing that we all enjoy, which is create music and visual arts, whatever it may be. So make sure to support your local artists and just any artist, because they need our support, especially during these trying times. But yeah, there you go. Okay, everybody, enjoy this episode with Chase, and we will see you next time. All right, Chase.
Patrick.
You're on the podcast. Here you are.
It's a blessing to be here with my favorite. You know, I think about it. I was like, wait, is this my second favorite or my absolute favorite, Patrick? And I was like, you know what? Patrick Starr, he can get bumped down to number two.
Wow.
Patrick Chappelle. Yeah.
That's an honor. Sure. Patrick Starr. That's a good Patrick.
It is. He's one of my favorite Patricks. Yeah. You know that.
I mean, people probably don't refer to Patrick the Starr around me enough, in my opinion. Right. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's just like they just hold that Patrick in such a different way. Don't even like think of me and that Patrick in the same.
Oh, I think of you. you know what? It just came to my mind is that, you know, I think that you are the combination of your name.
Oh.
Patrick and Chappelle. Dave Chappelle.
That's
I think of Dave Chappelle as a funny black man who I respect and admire.
Yep.
You're a funny black man that I respect and admire. And then Patrick Starr, he's a pleasant, you know, just jolly, happy dude.
Yeah.
Who lives under the sea? You live above the sea, but still, you're a pleasant dude. You're a pleasant guy.
And both of you
have no hair, and you rock it and look great doing it, bro. Like, I mean that. I mean that. Not everybody can pull that look, you know? But Patrick Starr does, and so do you. Actually, so does Dave Chappelle, too.
He does.
So does Dave Chappelle, too.
It's just a thing.
Yeah, man.
Once you cross over to the bald side, it really is a delightful experience. I know it's tough for people to imagine.
Yeah.
That's something, this is a funny way to start, but I like it.
Yeah.
Which is,
I like it too.
The one thing I think that is common for all races,
mm-hmm.
genders, everything.
Yeah.
All humans care a lot about hair, about their hair.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Like, everybody is, like, they just care about hair. Hair is an important thing to people.
Yeah.
So no matter who you are, like, that's something that we want to, like, have our hair be long or short, or we want to style it or not style it. Like, everybody has this care about hair. And when you lose it, no one is, like, everyone is sad if they lose it or it changes colors. Maybe not changes colors. Some people embrace the gray and the silver and that kind of thing, but... But yeah, hair.
I'll be the one to say it. Like, bald is bold. Like, I don't care who's rocking it. Like, you know, if you're the rock, if you're a chick who goes bald, like, it takes, like, if you can rock it, you have a butt look and you're a woman? Like, man, that's like, that's bold. That's a choice.
It's a choice.
It's a choice.
Sometimes.
As a man, that's a choice. Nobody. Like, for no matter who you are, like, bold is bold. I will say that. I will say that.
That's true. Okay, yeah. So Chase, you are currently in New York City, right?
I'm currently in the city of New York.
Wow. So there's so much to say just by living in New York, especially in trying times like this. You are
right.
You are in a city that has been hit pretty hard with the COVID, among other things, but that's interesting to be living in that city and doing the kind of work that you do. Which in some ways, the kind of work that you do is like great for quarantine times. Like you were made for quarantine times.
I was born for quarantine.
It's like, so I mean, because like that's, you know, for those that don't know, you work in the fitness world.
Right.
And it's like, that's some of the things that you're doing is all about like creating these home fitness environments and like that. And we've all been in home for a lot of this year.
True.
So, I mean, I'm sure that's been pretty helpful for people who are already on that journey with you. And I'm sure there's more that have joined in to that because, so yeah, maybe, I don't know, you can talk about that even like, how's that been for you to kind of like think about quarantining fitness for humans and yourself?
You know what? I think in my mind, for me personally, it is, it might sound weird to say, but it's like, nothing's really changed in that regard because since before quarantine, since before I was working in New York City, I've always been about, living a lifestyle that has elements of fitness that are adaptable, that evolve and adapt and are malleable to your current lifestyle, your preferences, your amount of time that you have available, your needs, your goals, all of that. And I think that in that regard, like me being somebody who's always pushed a fitness regimen and a healthy wellness lifestyle that will change and adapt with you and instead of the reverse, instead of you trying to conform to it conforming to you.
Right.
In that regard, my approach, my style, nothing's really, really changed.
Right.
I think that now this time forces a lot of people to, really think about it more in that way now. Like, maybe there is some merit to that. Often it's nothing new. It often takes a disruptive force or a pain or something that throws you off course or makes you uncomfortable for you to realize, you know what, actually I can do better in this area. And so, whether it was COVID, whether it's quarantine or whether it's anything else, there's always something that kind of makes you take your health, and your fitness, a little more, at least look at it in a different way.
Now, so was this always a journey for you? Like, did 16, 17-year-old Chase, like, are you living his dream right now? Like, working primarily in the, fitness, like, health, like, this is, like, is this, like, the thing that growing up in Chicago, this is what you wanted to do?
No. No.
That's so
great. To be honest, no. The answer is no. Living in Chicago as a kid, if someone ripped a hole in time and in space and time, it was like, hey, like stick your head through this and you'll pop out next to your, your younger self and you tell them what you're about to do in the future. If I did that, I ripped over that hole and I said, hey, bro, you're gonna grow up and work in fitness. You're gonna work out with people all over the world without even ever seeing them.
While you do it,
and or something like just or, I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, oh, huh?
Yeah.
Because it wasn't even on my radar. Like nowhere along the way. It's funny because looking back. it always makes sense looking back. You know, maybe sometimes it doesn't, but like it always, when you look back at your life, when you are, you know, in my opinion, when you're following your purpose, which is not one thing and one title or, you know, even one constant thing that is starting to change. When you're following your purpose, when you look back, you realize that every single thing, you know, it was part of the recipe building you for this. That's what I found for myself. But if I were to try to flip it and be like, oh, let me do this, 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 and this, because I know it's going to help me towards that, I never could even done that. And so that I just like, I'm personally, you know, I'm, you know, a Christian. I believe in, you know, in God. I respect however God reveals himself, the universe itself to others.
Sure.
But personally, you know, that's who I am and what I believe. And I think that is really just, you know, it makes me think of the quote, like when you know, how does the quote go where you're like making plans is like, you know, the quickest way to make God laugh or something like that.
You want to make God laugh,
you know, tell him your plan.
Right.
It's like, hey, God, I'm going to do this, 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 and this. And that's cool. It's cool to have, you know, intentions. But I think when you narrow down your focus, like you're only going to do this thing, you know, he just like lets out like a like a big old jelly. Okay, like wait till he's, you know. So, but like I never even could have, you know, to a certain extent, like every kind of turn and, you know, turn around the bend, around the corner, along the way of my path, it's been like, oh, word, okay. So I couldn't really predict, you know, and some things are more predictable than others, but like, I don't think that I knew I was even going to work within the earliest I even figured out that I was even going to work within the something even like close to fitness space was when I switched my major in junior year of college to, which made me a fifth year senior, junior year of college, which is why you saw my face, like one more year than you probably should have.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
At Lux University.
We've all been there.
That's just like, that's my path. And I'm like, I'm not saying that like it's a bad thing. Like anybody's like, that was my thing. And I love that. Like, I love that, you know, how my whole story played out. But, I switched majors junior year from pre-med because I was like, this is just not doing it for me. I'm very much the kind of person where like either I'm impassioned to do something, or like I'm just like not about it. And I was deluding myself to think that I was like, wow, I want to be a doctor like my parents, and follow in their footsteps. And I had this kind of whole like romantic story in my head because I'm like a hopeless romantic in that way. But like, zero pressure for my parents to do that. But I was like, no, I'm gonna do that.
What was the moment in junior year?
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that I switched my major to junior year to physical therapy because I was like, I want an academic probation. So I hit a low. I hit basically an academic slump. And basically it was like, I've got two choices. I can either get my shit together and, you know, figure out something, like pivot. Like we're talking about COVID and quarantine. Like, I can either pivot and like find something, take everything that I've already spent my time towards, pivot it, use it to like swing in its momentum towards something that I can actually see myself doing, or some semblance of that to recoup the time I've spent in college, or just like give up and get kicked out of college and like have to, you know, all that time, money wasted. So I was like, well, I'm not going to do the second part. So let me like dig deep and like really find out. And so I start, that's like the first time in my life that I actually sat down and I looked at, okay, like what do I actually enjoy?
Yeah.
What do I actually, my parents have always told me this, and like, just do what you love, you know, find something you love and do that thing. But I kept like telling myself like, oh no, I'm like, what about money though? Like, I gotta make money. And like, I was like, well, what about money? What about esteem from other people? Like, what about like all these other things that really don't matter? But that's the force. So again, that's in that situation. It's such a painful thing, a very painful situation for me to like realize, okay, like what do I actually enjoy? What's been a common thread in my life? Right. And for me, I've been an athlete since I was 4 years old. I've been,
what'd you play?
You know, playing sports, soccer at age four.
That's right. Yeah. Soccer.
And so
you're
everything from,
that's yeah. amazing. Soccer. Like mm-hmm. we got to talk about that. Black man playing soccer.
Let's do it.
But yeah, but keep going.
I'm pretty sure we were the first. Were we not?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, yeah. like some people be like, oh, you're yeah. a black guy playing soccer right. in right, Chicago. Yeah.
I will say, it's interesting, like, being living up in America and, like, the stereotype being, like, you know, people who say you play sports, like, oh, like, basketball? And I did play basketball, like, one time, like, I think it was, like, in middle school, but, like, it's and I'll play pickup randomly sometimes with friends, but like soccer has been my sport since right. you know, since I from the jump. So but I played everything from soccer, basketball, baseball, track and field, cross country, football. I was on swim team, all kinds of different sports. So I was like, well, that's something that I played all those things. And did all those things, and I never complained about it. So, right. like, I guess I like that. I guess I enjoy that. What if I pivot and take this and, like, I work with people, like, sports medicine. I go to physical therapy. So, that was the first time, junior year of high school, not high school, junior college, year of, yeah, college yeah. that I first, you know, was, like, you know, interested in anything close to fitness.
Yeah.
So, that was the beginning.
Huh. So, okay, yeah. So take me back here. So you kind of, you know, you dropped this in your story a little bit of,
yes,
like, your parents are doctors, right? Is that right?
Correct.
So, you know, so, I mean, obviously there's layers even to that being a reality for you. Because, like, right. here you are, have these two, I don't think I've met your parents before, but seemingly just hearing about them is what I know, like, brilliant people. And so right. achieving high goals. So, like, here you are, like, junior year, like, what am I doing? I need to yeah. pivot because, like, I come from this lineage of, like, excellence in the classroom, right? And so you kind of have yeah. this hovering over here, right? And then I'm right. also interested in, like, you grow up not only in Chicago, which kind of has a reputation and a vibe in and of itself, right? But then right. you grow up with parents who are doctors, so that means that your particular black experience is probably uniquely different than a lot of people when they think about the black experience growing up in right. in Chicago. And so right. I'm curious, like, how you even think
layers.
About
layers on layers
when
on
you
layers.
Think about that. Like, tell us about that.
You know what? It's so funny too that you mentioned that. Not only the lineage part, because I didn't mention this, but not only are my parents doctors, but their mothers, both of their mothers on each side were nurses.
Wow.
So it's like,
yeah.
I felt like the weight of, like,
yeah.
I'm like, okay. And so that was present in my life. And but I'll come back to that too, about how that actually manifested itself, and I actually am picking up the torch.
Oh yeah,
but just in a different way.
Oh, I was saying absolutely. Yeah,
but not only that, but, like, you're correct. There are layers. And speaking to my black experience and just in general, I actually grew up with a weird relationship with my black experience.
Yeah.
And I'd say that even today, I'm still daily coming to terms with it and appreciating it more. It's like a 180 to compare it, like, today, now, who I am and how I've owned my experience versus how in the past I've been, like, felt ashamed of it,
yeah.
felt guilty for it, felt undeserving of my blackness. I've felt like so many things because I just, like, because you're right, my black experience is not the list. Thought of, like, when you talk about, like, the typical stereotypical. So in a way, like, I grew up seeing the stereotypical black experience, like, thinking, like, do I even deserve to be in it? So I can only imagine, you know, how it feels for people who, like, are born mixed, like a white and black, because, like, you know how they say, like, they feel like they belong everywhere and yet nowhere at the same time. I kind of felt the same way, even though my skin doesn't reflect that, but, like, I felt that because not race wise or color wise, but psychographically speaking, I felt like I had kind of two, you know, a foot on each side, but like I belonged nowhere. I felt like I looked a certain way and people expected a certain thing of me, but then when I opened my mouth, mm-hmm. or, you know, begin to describe who I am, what I do, what I'm about, it just doesn't reflect each other. Speaking to those layers, just like, I've definitely grown. I'd say I've grown into my blackness in a way that it's unique, and I've come to actually appreciate it and cherish it and realize that and see it for all of the good that has come from me living a non-typical life of privilege in so many ways compared to the average. I use quotation marks because there is no average. There is no one way or monolithic way to be blackness.
How do you have moments growing up in high school, middle school, elementary school where you're like that? I do remember that this was a moment where it was where I did feel this, like, I am different in this space,
right?
You know, versus other moments. Like, I mean, on either side, because I could see that, you know, probably where you grew up and how you grew up is like totally different than maybe even some cousins and some other friends you may have had. So what do you have, like, moments that are kind of lodged in your memory as like, oh, those were moments I remember, you know, whether it's on the sports field? Because I mean, that too, right? Like you said, you know, soccer is not like uncommon to the global black experience, right?
Right.
But America black experience, it's like football.
It's like soccer, what?
Yeah, exactly. So what was, talk about that growing up in, you know, in Chicago like that. What was that like for you? Do you have any moments that stand out to you?
You know what? Growing up, so I moved from Chicago when I was about 12 or 11. So even though, like, I claim Chicago fully, and I'm like,
right,
I'm the most like Chicago person I know. Like, I claim it fully, but like, I would say, like, I have the three chapters, I would say, to my, yeah, well, I guess there's like a chapter for each kind of phase of where I moved. So I moved around a little bit. So another part of my story is that I moved around a little bit.
Yeah.
Spent from birth to about 11 in Chicago, moved to Florida to help my grandparents. My family wanted to help my grandparents because my grandfather on my mother's side had medical issues, and so we wanted to help them out.
Absolutely.
So 3 years there, then moved to Tennessee.
Yeah.
Which spoiler alert is where I met you. but then spent 2 years in high school there.
Yeah.
And then spent all 4 years of, or 5 years, college in Tennessee and Nashville, and then stuck around for a few more years before moving to then New York. So each location, I'd say I can kind of divide my life into those chapters, but within the chapter of Chicago, I'd say, what I remember is definitely getting the sense and realizing, you know, the general sense that, like, there was black, and then there was me.
Interesting.
And I realized that even my dad grew up in the West Side of Chicago. He grew up in, like, you know, the projects, like the rough part, you know, the worst, what's known as like the worst part of Chicago, mm-hmm. Even to this day. And so he would always tell us, like, you know, put us on game, like street smarts, and like, you know, he doesn't sound like me when he talks. I mean, he's a doctor, so he can, you know, do both. Right. You know, the coach pushing, you know, relax, be professional, but then like be his like, you know, hey, what's up? Like, you know, throw him like the slam to Ebon. It's like, hey, you coming to the crib? Like that kind of stuff. So he'd be like, you know, like poke fun at me sometimes for sounding, you know, white, but like in jest and joking. But like, it made me, I remember at a certain point, like thinking as it relates to like how I sound and how I speak, I was like, you know what? I don't sound how a lot of people who look like me sound. And I was like, I remember thinking like, should I try to like sound different? Should I? Because I don't know why, but in that moment, I forget how even old I was. This is a weird thing to think too. But like, I remember sitting in, it was in somewhere in downtown in Chicago. I remember just having a conversation with myself like, you know, if you're like thinking to myself, like if you're going to change, you may as well do it now because it's so early that you could get away with it and no one would know. Or you could just keep saying, talking like you do and just like be yourself.
Right.
But I remember just like shrugging, like, nah, I'm just going to, I'll keep this.
Yeah.
Just be
you.
Just be me.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, yeah, it just didn't, anything else would have just felt like inauthentic. But I've been, even then, like, I've been through phases where I'm like, oh, like, which I feel like we all go through, like, I feel like playing around with like baggy clothes, like dressing like I'm, you know, this and that, and like trying to find like my style and like different stuff. Like,
yeah.
We've all been through like those weird, awkward phases, but like, there was definitely this kind of thought in the back of my mind, like, I felt like I had something to prove, you know, like, sure. It's interesting. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about this for a minute. So you, as relates to you as this instructor, this coach, this trainer, which are kind of now the titles that often, you know, surround yourself, even you would probably have a title with some people as social media presence, right? You know, influencer is that buzzword that we often
use. Influencer, correct.
So the one kind of trademark that has been known for you, and I've known this, and it's seen in the work that you do, is this incredible positive energy. Like, it's just positivity is high. So I'm always interested in like where is that from? Like how where is that grounded? Where did that how and A, where is it grounded? B, how does it get filled back up? Because sure, I can only imagine that you've worked a full day personal training, group training, you know, getting online and posting and kind of writing these posts that are encouraging, inspiring, and challenging. And then it's like end of the day, it's like, okay, how does that tank of positive chase get filled back up so that you're able to like do it again the next day and not find yourself burning out where so many people do find themselves? Because I'm sure you've had moments where that has happened and you're like, okay, I've now got to figure out my rhythm. Yeah.
Yeah. So to answer your question, I'd say that, you know, in short, it's just like, know yourself, like know yourself, learn yourself. I have, you know, I've experienced enough to know, you know, what my limits are, when I feel burned out, and when to back off, when to kind of push forward, when to kind of pull back.
Sure.
Which that can be applied to everything in life. It's like knowing when to, you know, make a play or make a move, and then knowing when to like recuperate, whatever, but knowing that they're both required. That's definitely part of it, but knowing myself most importantly, because like I, as far as like the optimism or like the positivity is concerned, like, I try to like remind people of this all the time on social media. It's like, I'm not positive all the time. Like I don't wake up thinking like, oh, it's, I mean, when I wake up, I legit, like, thank God. I say, like, I either say thank you or I think of, like, three things that I'm grateful for, because that, it actually rewires your brain to,
yeah,
it's something, it's like this, it's probably, that alone is like this, the simplest, smallest thing that you can do to change your entire life.
How long have you done that? How long have you been doing that? Waking up with the gratitude list?
I'd say, it's hard to pinpoint like an actual exact date, sure, but like shortly, I'd say like in Nashville. So like around, when did I move here? Like 2018, maybe like 2015.
Yeah. Okay.
Five, 6 years maybe. As long as I've been like meditating, I think meditating is what got me realizing like how important that is.
Oh, that's great.
Just because it oriented, you know, or directed my awareness around to like how much thoughts are important and how much power they really have, you know, for better or for worse, like they have so much power.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Self-talk as well. So I'm just thinking in the morning, something like, Either saying thank you or thinking of three things I'm grateful for, either one, it already, just by me saying that, it reminds me that I'm good.
Yeah.
You know? That's it's good. So easy to wake up with the alternative.
Yeah.
And it reminds you that, like, I'm blessed. Here's why I'm blessed. I already have, it's like, so I'm already here. I'm already at, like, square one.
Mm-hmm.
It can really only get better from here.
Yeah.
Like that's what that reminds you. It's like everything that I have, it's a reminder to yourself of like everything that I have could easily not be here.
Right. Oh, true.
And,
that's very
and
true.
I'm just like, I'm grateful that it's not. One thing that really drove this point home for me that I really haven't been able to stop thinking about since is like, imagine Patrick, you know, imagine if a man were to like, you know, walk into the room right now and pull out without a suitcase and imagine that this is like,
yeah.
Imagine it actually sitting there. Imagine he opened the suitcase and was like, here is, you know, $1 billion.
Thank you.
You know? You know, he didn't give it to you yet. He was like, hey, this is $1 billion, right?
Okay. This is $1 billion.
And then
yeah,
you're like looking at it like, whoa, is that for me? And he's like, yeah, absolutely. This is for you. And you're like, can I take it? He's like, well, yeah, absolutely. It's for you. Well, but here's the catch. And you're like, okay, sure. What's the catch?
Sure,
like, I'm just going to be something crazy, but like, it's $1 billion. What would I not do for $1 billion?
Right.
He's like, I'll give you $1 billion, but all you have to do is not wake up tomorrow.
Ooh.
Like, what would you say?
Not wake up tomorrow?
Yeah. Tomorrow you don't wake up. Like, you'll never wake up again.
No, I don't take it.
Like, right? Okay, no. So then he takes $1 billion, he walks away. But, like, you walk away, you're sitting there like, damn, there goes $1 billion.
Right.
But in that moment, in that exchange of words, you're essentially saying that you waking up in the morning is worth more than $1 billion.
That's right.
Yet so often we wake up, like, as if on accident or as if, like, the most miraculous, more than $1 billion worthy thing hasn't happened.
Yeah.
Like, I think we so often wake up and don't even realize that, like, there are people who did it.
Right.
So, like,
yeah, that's great.
Like, legit. So I think that alone is, like, the most powerful thing to orient your mind and just make you realize that, like, wow. Like, when you're in that mind state, it's so hard for things to faze you. Like, yeah, things that don't matter, things that you won't really, things that won't, that may bother you now, but, like, really don't matter in 10 years, you won't even remember. It's so easy for those things to just, like, not, just, like, slip off your back, because you realize, like, bro, I just woke up.
Yeah, well, it's a good reminder that,
yeah,
that this whole thing is a gift. Like, this is a gift. You are a precious
exactly
gift. Like, this thing exactly is a gift, this body, this life.
Right.
Is truly a gift, and it's like
it really is.
It is, because you're exactly right. Yeah. There are people who didn't wake up today.
Right.
There are people who did not, who were not safe in the environment
right
which they slept in. Like you,
yes,
for a lot of us, it's not true for all of us. Like a lot of us like slept in safety and comfort,
right?
And we woke up in this new thing of a gift. And simply put, it is this really great gift called life. Right. And what do you do with this precious gift? Is important.
Yes, true. As one of my fellow instructors at Peloton says, his name is Alex Toussaint. That's my brother.
Yeah.
He's like a brother to me, but he says something along the lines of, you know, like he'll take a moment, like in class, like he's on the bike doing his thing. Like he'll stop and like, he's like, look at you right now. Like, be grateful. You got to wake up this morning and like, you know, you got a chance to wake up this morning and play again one more day in this game called life.
Yeah.
And he'll, like, it's like, yo, it's so true.
Yeah.
It's like, you could easily be game over any moment, but it's not. So the reason I bring that up is like that alone. And why that's so important is because starting your day with gratitude in any form, way, shape, or form, immediately makes it so that like it just kills. And it's such a way to like quell and suffocate entitlement, suffocate expectation, suffocate just worry, suffocate so many things that really are just like form a cloud like, you know, anxiety inducing. Yeah. Like cloud, like it just hangs over your head from the morning you wake up.
Yeah, it's like a haze.
It's hazy. Yeah. Imagine like you wake up and like you literally get out of bed and like you're in a polluted smog and all you got to do is say, thank you. And it immediately just like
clears up. Yeah.
All the poisonous gas, it just clears away and you can just breathe. So that alone allows for more positivity. Now, I'm not going to say that you'll be able to do that and like you'll instantly be like, seem as positive as I am because. You know, one thing I've recognized myself is why I said know yourself is because I realized that positivity and like optimism is actually a superpower of mine. It's so knowing myself enough to know that like, okay, being optimistic is a superpower of mine. And, you know, and it's also true that like whatever your superpower is, you have an equal and opposite, you know, weakness in that regard too, but that's another subject we can dive in at another time. But like, you know, that's my superpower, right? So my optimism is my superpower. It allows me to reframe every single situation, no matter how bad, and see the good in it, find the silver lining and turn it into something that allows me to move forward and pivot without dwelling too much on what's negative. So that is my superpower, and that's what's something that I try to often use to empower other people to help them realize that there really is nothing that can happen to you that can't have something good come from it.
Yeah. Now, and at the same time, you know, and a good thing to remind everybody is there is something to be learned in the suffering that is happening, that the disruption that has happened. And so I guess, like, have you been able, because it sounds like that you are great at reframing maybe the pitfall, the pain, the hurt, the disappointment. Do you sometimes think you move too quickly to the reframing, or do you, have you been able to like find yourself to like, okay, let me at least stay here and like glean the lesson that is from this moment, or is that still something you're like kind of like calibrating and working
on? So it's funny you should mention that, because that's what I was referring to as far as like the equal and opposite weakness, because therein lies the struggle for people like myself who, and I'm not sure if you've taken the Enneagram.
Of course.
Okay, good. So you know what I'm talking about then, because I'm a seven.
But yeah,
so
well, that's when you said that, I was like, He's a seven. It sounds like it. I don't know. We'll see.
So the kind of text, but for those who don't know, the Enneagram is basically like, if you could think of, if you've heard of the Myers-Briggs, I hope you have. Otherwise, this analogy doesn't make sense. But like, it's essentially like it's a test, like the Myers-Briggs that allows you to, in the way that the Myers-Briggs allows you to assess your tendencies or your personality a little bit. And kind of give you one of, I think it's 16 different.
They're nine types. So it's not
the Enneagram. I'm talking about Myers-Briggs.
Oh yeah, Myers-Briggs.
Myers-Briggs puts you in one of 16.
Sure. Yes.
Categories. The Enneagram is one such that, so it does the same thing, except behavior and the underlying reasons for those behaviors and how and the lens through which you see the world, which essentially affects everything, which is why it's so much more impactful, in my opinion, than the Myers-Briggs. But that one also gives you one of nine archetypes that you fit within. Right. Mine happens to be the seven, and one of the things on my lens is that it makes it so that I tend to avoid pain.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, everybody sees something painful is different. So for some people, confrontation is painful. But they avoid that. I don't see that's not something for me.
Yeah.
But things that cause me pain, I tend to avoid, or tend to try to quickly move through.
Which is a
blessing. But then in certain ways, sometimes. But then it's also a curse, I actually do need to sit down and be present and fully absorb the damage and the hurt that I've caused either myself or another person.
Yeah.
So
that's good.
It comes to knowing self.
Yeah.
Knowing yourself and seeing yourself as something worthy of studying.
Yeah. That's right. That's good.
It's so massive. So massive.
Now, one thing I will say for those listening who know me, I've been on a couple podcasts about the Enneagram, and I will say I don't really recommend taking a test. I recommend reading a book or listening to a podcast, going to a conference. But a test can be helpful, but just hold the test loosely and then go on the journey of discovering what your type might be. But it's a helpful tool, and it's. And I think that's a big thing. I think that I try to encourage people when we have these kind of conversations is it is a tool. It's not the end all be all. It's not the best thing on planet Earth. It is incredibly helpful and it can be useful for you on your journey. Okay. So let's talk about, something I did want to mention, which is you have, I'm sure, personally trained a lot of folks in your life, right? In big groups and small groups.
That's safe to assume.
What's that? Safe to assume. So
safe to assume.
People probably come to you saying, Chase, I have goals for I have fitness goals, my guy. And they say, let's get after it. What have you seen in your experience? It's like the thing that is often challenging for people to get on board with. Like, is it the and kind of how I think about it is like
easy. That's easy.
Oh, it's easy. Okay, let's hear that.
Easy. As it in regards to people's fitness, goals and fitness routines, the simplest, and it's so simple, but nobody wants to pay attention to it. But essentially, the thing that people struggle with the most is sustainability.
Oh,
sustainability.
Tell me more.
When you think about the reason that fitness, wellness, health, the industry or the category, the genre of those things even exist, it's essentially to take care of your mind, your body, your spirit, which this is a vessel for, right?
Yeah.
And when you think about how long are you going to have your body and your mind and your spirit, your entire life, right?
Yeah.
But literally so much of what the fitness industry sells and promotes isn't lifetime solution based. It's for, get your summer, get your this, get,
right.
Here's a program you can do for this long. So we, instead of having, it's like, it's sustainability is the number one thing, because if you always operate with, and this just doesn't apply to fitness, but with life in general, if you think about everything in such a way, how can I operate and function within this in such a way that I can do this consistently in a way that I can grow within this, I can learn within this, I can consistently get better in this, and that it's adapted to me, my needs, my preferences, my goals, what I want for myself, regardless of what anybody else has to say, anything else. If you approach it from that perspective, for sustainability, everything else, literally everything else falls into place, because everything you can ask is like, oh wait, should I go vegan? try out veganism. Like, try it out. Try it for a month.
Sure, sure.
Okay, cool. I tried it. Is it sustainable? Can you keep doing it? Nah, I really miss meat. Don't do that anymore. Try something else. Oh, like, what about, you know, I really feel like I should be in the gym all the time, but, like, you know, I hate doing the gym stuff. Well, try it for a month. Okay, I tried it. Was it sustainable? You think you can do it for life? Nah. Keep as long as you keep. If you use sustainability as your guardrails, you will always be okay. But it's sustainability is the thing that people always put on the back burner, and for that reason, they always find themselves suffering and running around in circles because you have no guardrails. Of course, you're going to go off course, and you're going to end up wildly off course until you experience a pain. Hopefully not physical and literal, but like, so you feel experience a pain that brings you back on course. But why do that when you can literally just ask yourself, can I do this for life? Hmm. Is this something that I can do for life?
Yeah.
You know? That alone, if sustainability is the thing that you use as your compass, then you'll be set.
Yeah. So, okay. Here's a question. That is gold, by the way. Because part of me thinks too that when you were saying that, it's like, well, it's true. If I want a temporary result, like summer bod, well then it's gonna be temporary, right? Like, so it's gonna be like like if I'm trying for this lifestyle and this life of this, then sustainability needs to be the way I think about this, not in this like, I need to get the summer bod. I need to get the spring break bod. I need to fit into the wedding, you know, suit, the gown, the whatever. Yeah, that's good. So, okay. There's a
Patrick.
Yes.
Like an analogy that just popped in my head is like, imagine if you literally, like you change this, but I mean, this is like, I don't know. Like, imagine if you changed, like, you just bought a new home or changed your career, like, every month, every 2 months. Huh. And you're like, oh, let me try this. Like, and you never gave any forethoughts. Like, is this something that I'm actually can see myself doing for, like, a long time?
Yeah.
And, like, that's how people treat their bodies. People are literally, they're like, jumping in and out of their, you know, bodies, like, as homes, like, and seeing that as normal, and it's not.
Wow.
Like, imagine it's literally that your body, the one thing that you're going to have that's going to outlast everything else in your life.
Yeah.
But we treat it more temporarily than we do the things that are super like temporary in our life, like your career. So I don't know.
Yeah.
That's just.
So, okay. Here's my question then, as it relates to your work in the fitness world. And, and this kind of brings us to a place I wanted to at least touch on before we kind of start landing the plane a little bit, which is, you know, here you've worked in high-end fitness, you know, gyms. You're now part of a global organization now that is all about, you know, fitness and well-being and health for people. And the thing that at least I've noticed, generally speaking, is that you don't see the collective Black community flooding this space yet. That's not to say that there aren't, because there definitely are, right? As far as trainers and people who are participating, but it seems that it doesn't. And I don't know if you've spent a lot of time thinking about like why that may be, or what's kind of in the way of that kind of seeing more Black and brown bodies in like your classes or in calling on you to train them in some ways. And so I'm wondering if you chatted or spent any kind of time thinking about that. And if so, kind of what's your insight perspective of why that may be?
Right. So to answer your question, that's a very good question, first of all. Within my content, which I create, I make the workouts and people take it, they share their stories. I see people from all walks of life, you know.
That's great. Yeah.
Taking my, you know, black, white, Asian, Hispanic, Middle, like, of all, literally. And I love that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want it any other way. And I couldn't, right. I really couldn't do this if it wasn't like that. I mean that because diversity is such an important thing to me. Not even just in that way, but like in my life in general. Like, in that whole time we even have like a group called like Black Girl Magic. I love them because they show so much love, and I love that they are literally a representation of what we need more. We need more black people, getting into fitness and realizing the importance and getting educated and like on it and becoming healthier,
right.
Because but I will say that we don't operate or live in a world in America, at least in my opinion, that makes that conducive. So the reason that makes me so happy and excited is because the fitness as it stands, and of course I guess over time, but like as it stands, fitness industry has a way to go, and I plan on being a part of that movement, but it has a way to go in order to make health, wellness, and fitness a place that is safe for black bodies.
Yeah.
A place where they feel safe, seen, represented, heard, cared for. But like many other areas in our country, or in the world in general, the alternative is such the case,
right,
that, you know, it's a bit of an uphill battle. And in so many ways there are, like, you know, we could talk about, that could be its own podcast, talking about like, you know, food deserts and how there are literally black communities that have no access to healthy, good quality food. Right. And so like, and there's, you know, lack of education, and there's misinformation going around. There's like there's just so many things that kind of have to be dealt with and addressed. And I think that now is better time than ever to address them, given like the 2020 moment, not a moment, 2020 isn't a moment. Like, this is a movement. It's yeah. sparked and birthed a movement
that
I am so excited to be part of. And so to answer your question, that's actually something that I have given deep thought to, and I've actually had conversations with, you know, my peers and my superiors at Peloton about like how I plan to be a part of that, and to whether it means like going to, you know, physically, you know, lead workouts with inner city youth, or, you know, be a part of programs that, you know, fund, you know, this, that, or the other for the black community. Like, trust and believe that from the beginning, from even before I ever got in Peloton, that was something I planned on putting the black community on my shoulders and made this something that, like, I promised myself that my growth and my progress in this industry and in my life will not occur without the same thing happening for my people.
Right.
I refuse to let that happen. I refuse for what I build to not have been built with the bricks and the blood, sweat, and tears of me putting in that sweat equity to invest in my people. I don't mean just like people like from Chicago or Haiti, which I'm, which I'm from both.
Yeah.
But I mean just like people who look like me and making sure that that's definitely gonna be part of my legacy for sure.
Yeah, that's great. Woo, this has been good. So I guess I'm a few more things, and then we're gonna get to speed round. You know, you've got a strong social media presence, and you've been speaking out a lot about everything from what's been happening with the Black Lives Matter movement and how we think about race and racism in America. And it's been interesting to watch because, you know, I noticed you and a couple other people who will take the time to, like, people who try to drift onto the comments and be, you know, a little bit ratchet, be a little bit ratchet, if we're being honest. We love them. We love them with the love of the Lord, but they be ratchet sometimes. Yeah. And I'm curious to you, like, as you, just in a general way, like, why do you think there are so many people, and not that there's like an abundance amount, but there's still a good amount of people who are still struggling with, like, coming to terms with, like, racism is right. is still in this, is never left us. This right. movement is a movement we need to be all getting yeah. behind. Like sure. what's kind of been like, you kind of been taking in these comments because you put yourself out there. You definitely, right. that's one thing I say for to sure. people. It's like, if you put yourself out there, you're going to see what people think about it because you're putting it out there. Right.
So I'd say, first of all, don't expect overnight for yourself to go from like not stepping in that arena to then doing it and feeling like, oh, this is where I belong. There are like, this is something that's been built up to. I've built up to this. I've, as it relates to social media, my relationship with it, I have slowly but surely exposed more and more and more of myself, my soft underbelly, and been vulnerable in different ways, to the point where I feel I can say just about anything on social media or to anybody, even in person, offline, and be ready to stand firm in what I've said and be ready to not like so adamant that I'm not going to really be corrected. Like I'm such an open-minded person and I make sure that that's known, but like, I've built up to this. So the beauty of this whole moment, this Black Lives Matters moment that I keep telling myself, my peers, is that I could not be working in a better career than what I do, because it is literally the perfect analogy for everything that's happening this way, both fitness and addressing racism, building, working to be an anti-racist person in society, both recognizing a pain in your life, realizing it's not going to be comfortable, it's not supposed to be comfortable, creating a willingness and a drive and a desire to do the work necessary, create a strategy to complete that mission, and surround yourself with a community of other people who are also on that same mission so that you can be fed and fueled and pushed in that direction. You don't have to just do it by your own willpower, right? So both fitness and anti-racism work, they're a perfect, I literally could not be in a better, work in a better role than this. There is no better, because it's the perfect analogy. It's the one analogy that is used for so many other things, but like as it pertains to this, it's perfect. It's amazing. So it's a ripe with opportunity to be able to just very nimbly go back and forth because there's just so many overlapping parts. But when people come into my comments, how I approach that, and I get people DMing me in comments all the time, like, oh my gosh, Chase, like, you can handle that. I saw what you said in the comments, that person who was being, you know, ratchet or whatever, like, oh my gosh, your grace and your patience, it's like so much, oh my goodness, I would definitely not have had the patience to do that. And that's like, when I think about it, I'm like, well, to the extent that, you know, patience isn't just like a, you know, people say patience is virtue, but it's like, it's just like everything is a skill. Patience is a skill. You don't just wake up. Right. You don't say, oh God, give me patience. And like, you have, it's like you exercise and you train your patience. You train your ability to not take that jab. When you want to, you train your ability to like withhold for the greater good of the conversation to get to the actual win. Because the win is not you being right and like looking like, yeah, I was like, yeah, I'm the winner. The win for me, when I answer those conversations, the win is really us finding our shared understanding, our common ground, and then moving toward the truth.
Right.
So if the truth means me admitting that my information or my belief was false, and then being willing to question that before I then come in the arena again, I'm fully okay and willing to do that. But that takes a level of humility. It takes a level of really desiring the truth more than your own saving face, more than your own, you know, ego, right? Yeah. Understanding and having a relationship with your ego to understand like when it's at play and like when you're making ego moves, and then you're actually making like God moves, like your higher self. So I always try to. I would take like a, you know, proverbial like deep breath before engaging in those conversations, because I'm like, no, legit. Because like while I do say it would make for amazing comedy if I were to shred these people, like no, you don't know, man, you don't know. Sometimes people say these things, and I'm like, you don't even know how. Like I could just, I'm not, and I think it's to say that like. don't feel guilty when you have these thoughts of like wanting to say the bad thing, because even I get that. I'm not a saint. I'm like, I think in my head, like, bro, I could demolish you. I could dismantle you piece by piece. I could dismantle your entire argument right now, the entire, like, and all along the way, brick by brick, you know, throwing these darts at you that make you feel like a complete and total idiot and a loser to the point where you never want to, you don't even want to show your face for the rest of it. I could totally do that.
That's right.
But what would that serve? Like, not only in that, if I actually acted from that place, not only have I completely killed any opportunity for us to find common understanding and for us to both learn from each other, but I've also cemented that person further deeply into what I believe to be false. I've made them further cling more tightly to their belief, regardless of whether their belief was right or wrong. I've caused them now to cling even harder, and for what? So I can feel for like a moment like I'm the man, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I know that in a moment afterward, I'm going to regret it. I'm going to be like, you know what? I shouldn't have said that. You know? So you're right. So I try to act from a place of like, you know, I won't acting from the place of like, will I regret this or not? You know? And even though I might regret it, it might be painful in the moment, I will never regret coming to those conversations with patience, with understanding, and the willingness to be vulnerable and the willingness to be, you know, insulted or called names, you know? So
it's good.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good. Well, hey, we could talk forever, but let's do a little speed round.
Cool. Let's do it. I'm ready for it.
Okay. We'll do this one. What first one? What's something people seem to misunderstand about you?
People misunderstand about me. Like I said before, like, I'm not positive all the time. I have my dark moments.
Yeah.
Just like the next person. I just choose not to wallow in them.
Yeah.
I find whiter or good, and I act from that place.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah. What's a few of your favorite quotes?
A few of my favorite quotes. One, first one is, it's what you do in the dark that puts you in the light. Another one is, the quality of your life can be determined by the number of uncomfortable conversations you're willing to have.
Ooh.
And the third one I will say is, man, I can't even think of a third one right now, but like those two alone are gold.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I love them all, but that uncomfortable conversations one is so good. And here's, I don't know, I'm going to make a statement.
And it applies to conversations with yourself and others.
Yeah. And I would say that as a black or brown body in the U.S., you by nature have a lot of uncomfortable conversations.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you've heard the of uncomfortable conversations with a black man.
I've seen that. Yeah.
Man. I'm glad you know about it. Good. Cool.
That's
cool.
Good. All right.
But those are two of my favorite quotes. If I have to come up with a third, I can.
Yeah, that's fine. Those are good.
Okay, cool.
Albums everybody should listen to.
Albums everybody, that's a good one. Everybody should listen to. That makes me like, what albums do I listen to the most? I think everybody should listen to I can't think about albums that are like G-rated. Like,
no! Why do you need G-rated? Drop the albums that people need to be listening to. What's everybody gotta at least listen to one time?
You know what? I'll say this, like, I don't know the name of the album, but check out my boy Toby Nwigwe. If you haven't heard of him, T-O-B-E. And then Nwigwe is Nigerian. So it's N-W-I-G-W-E. Toby Nwigwe. Okay. He's a Nigerian-American rapper based out of Southwest Alief, Texas. I know that because he calls it the SWAT. It's called the SWAT. But from Houston, Texas. And he's a rapper based out of there. He's a Christian rapper. And he's like my favorite. I love him so much because he makes Christian rap cool because he's like, he talks about purpose. Even his tag in his bio and his Instagram bio is, I make purpose popular. And he does. He does it beautifully. Wow. He's gotten nods from everybody from, you know, I think Dave Chappelle, from like Andre 3000, from Erykah Badu,
yeah,
from like so many of the greats in music and out of music that I've like addressed him and see him as BET is recognized. He's like my favorite rapper of all time.
That's good.
I feel like he's doing within rap what I want to do within you know, fitness for sure.
Anybody else?
Who's another one? What's another album everybody should listen to? Man, that's, you know, the funny thing is I'm actually like not an album, but one album that I find myself going back to all the time.
Sure.
And like the album Trilogy, by The Weeknd.
Trilogy by The Weeknd. Okay.
Trilogy by The Weeknd. It's literally a trilogy of like three different albums.
That's right.
And I'll just go on to, I will say that it's not G rated, but like just, I discovered The Weeknd in college and like, just, I love, I feel like The Weeknd, like just listening, he's just like, he's one of my favorite. He's one of my favorite artists for sure. So,
okay. One or two books people should read.
Books that people should read. Living Forward.
Living Forward.
By Michael Hyatt.
Oh, yeah.
And,
all right.
You've heard of that?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I went on a bookshelf to see if it's here, but I forget the name of the other guy. David Harkavy. Michael Hyatt and David Harkavy, I think, are the names. But, yeah, that book is all about writing down your life plan, which we often – it's something that we always think of, but we never actually do. But it's the single – I would say that's been, like, the single most powerful action I've ever taken in my life. Writing down my life plan. I don't mean like writing down something that like, oh, this is like exactly what I'm going to do. Right. And it's step by step laid out. But I mean like writing down the intention of what you plan to do with your life in a broad general sense that will then direct and dictate the small micro things that you do. Yeah. It creates a framework and a compass for your life that alone has been like the most powerful book I've ever read. And it's prompted me because at the end of the book, it tells you like set aside a whole day. To just write your life plan, like no distractions, nothing else, just set aside a whole day, write. And that's really how long it takes.
Yeah.
And that's the most powerful thing I've ever done in my life.
That's great. For sure. That's great. It's good. I like it. Okay. If you had to leave New York tomorrow.
Yes.
Forever.
Okay.
What's a couple spots you got to go to before you get out of town?
To leave New York forever?
Yeah.
First of all, I couldn't do that.
Like, that's true. Okay, that's fine. Like, but for the sake of the question.
Not only professionally, you know, but like I just wouldn't, like I love New York too much for that. But like if I had a couple stops I would stop by before leaving, I would stop by Hudson River and Manhattan and like get one last look at the kind of that river, the skyline. It's beautiful. It's where I do my morning runs, I'll go and run along that area. And it's where I've had so many kind of like internal quiet, like at 5 a.m. in the morning, it's been where I've had so many, before the sun hasn't come up yet, I'll just have so many conversations with myself and God. Just looking at the water, looking across at Jersey, looking at the city behind me, and just like, so I go there. Another place I would go would be, what's another place I would go? Oh, Donut Project. Duh. There's a donut shop here called Donut Project here in New York. It's in Greenwich Village, which is where I used to live back when the Peloton track studio was there.
Yeah.
And yeah, let me just say that they've got like amazing. I've got a couple pieces of their apparel too. I've got a shirt and a hoodie.
Nice.
I've got a shirt and a hoodie from this, so you know it's good, right? So
yeah. If you buy a hoodie from a restaurant. You love that restaurant.
So their glazed donuts are just like, they're like these big, poofy, just perfectly
placed,
you know, pieces of delicate, goodness. So it's amazing. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm gonna pick some up before I leave. So.
All right. There you go. Okay. If you had to go on a road trip and you could pick any three people, dead or alive, to be in the car with you, who would it be?
Jesus, take the wheel. Take it, my baby.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I could legit take the wheel out, so I can just sit back and just, like, hang my head out the window or something like that. But, no, I have Jesus first and foremost.
Yeah.
I would let him be the, you know, backseat driver or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, to guide me mm-hmm. along the way. Jesus, I mean, who after Jesus is there? Like, who's going to join me on a road trip? I would say, yeah, I'm going to go with Jesus. Somebody else, bro. I got two more spots.
Yeah, you have two more spots in the car.
Maybe my little brother and my little sister.
Okay, like, that's fine. It's your road trip.
Yeah.
You can choose whoever.
So yeah. So that. I mean, because I'm little. That's literally like that's like a metaphor for how my life is right now. Like Jesus is, I feel like, leading the way, and I'm gonna be here with my brother and sister. So
okay. Yeah, that's very him. Sweet. Very yeah. sweet.
Yeah. So that's what I'm gonna pick. I was feeling like after this, I'm gonna think like, dang, why didn't I say that person? But yeah, that's what I'm gonna say for now.
Okay. And then,
yeah. No. That's a good answer.
Yeah, because then you're gonna have to kick one of them out. So
exactly, I can't exactly.
Okay, so what do you think are one or two keys to a good life?
One or two keys to a good life. So key number one. At least I'm just speaking for myself, is like,
yeah, that's right.
Everything. Do everything with like, find purpose in everything.
Yeah.
Find purpose in everything. And by that I mean like, you know, I believe we're all here for a reason, and we have specific gifts, talents, curiosities, traits, habits, behaviors that we each have that are unique to us 100%. It's like a fingerprint or DNA that we have, and we each have a puzzle piece that only we can fit. But in order for us to do that and fill that spot and heal the world in the way that only we can, and to provide not that we're only here to be, you know, our worth is found in like our how useful we are, but you know, I think that we all have our unique gifts, strengths, talents, curiosities, and so leaning into how can I be the most heightened level of myself by digging deep and learning myself, so I can unleash and unlock higher levels of myself. So that I can fulfill that purpose to the absolute fullest.
Perfect.
That is what I use, you know, for my life. And so that's actually the only key that I didn't give. Because within that, everything else falls into place.
There you go. Any shout outs you want before we get out of here? Got any shout outs?
Shout out mom, shout out dad, what's up? Ooh. You guys are my heroes. Thank you for coming out, you know, my mom will come over there to America, a little girl from Haiti. Thank you, dad, for coming out of West Side Chicago, nobody believed in you and becoming a doctor and doing big things. And yeah,
good.
They're all my heroes, my parents.
Chase, thank you. Follow Chase on the IG. Get into one of his classes.
He's a
beast.
I'm on Instagram at Chase Tucker. That's Chase Tucker. Super simple. That's all right. It.
Peace out. Thanks, y'all. We'll see ya.
Deuces.